This is Cyber Defense Radio with your host and cybersecurity expert, Gary Malefsky. Gary brings to you another globally recognized cybersecurity executive in the hot seat today.
Sitting in my hot seat today is Kaustub Mehdi. He's the head of research and intelligence at one of my favorite companies in cybersecurity, Cyble, C-Y-B-L-E. And they are a remote-friendly company. They've got offices and locations around the world. You might remember my prior interview with their CEO about their website, amibreached.com, which consumers, businesses, everybody should take a look at that and see if you're on the deep, dark web. And Kaustub focuses as the head of research on threat intelligence for enterprises. So that's really what we're going to dive into today. And I've got a lot of questions. We could talk about AI and actionable threat intelligence and what's going on in the space. Kaustub, welcome to the hot seat today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Gary.
Yeah, so tell me, in your research, what are some of the top findings? Like, what are you seeing lately? Is ransomware still the biggest attack vector? Are you seeing things, that affect people in certain industries? Is it financial? Who's getting hit the most? And what are you seeing on your threat research?
Yeah, so ransomware, I think, is now a well-established, threat attack pattern that we've seen emerge over the years. Specifically at Cyble, we've been tracking ransomware very closely for the last couple of years. In fact, we come out with a quarterly ransomware analysis report, which covers, the global attacks that we've seen being conducted by some of these ransomware as a service groups. And over the years, we've seen, different kinds of threat patterns evolve, ransomware operators disbanding, forming new ransomware platforms, targeting victims in various industries using different strains of malware. And really, ransomware groups typically go after the money, right? So wherever the industry has a lot of financial aspects involved, or if there's a lot of data, consumer data, that's where ransomware groups really have been focusing on. And I think there's been a slight change in the kind of way ransomware actors are now operating. We've seen them go after some of these large critical infrastructure industries, right, which are really a critical cog in the wheel for the economy, oil and gas companies, power utility companies, and stuff like that. And then we've seen some legislation catching up with them as well. So the US government is now planning to go after ransomware operators proactively, and looking at offensive security as a deterrent to ransomware. So that's really a new development that we are seeing in this space. And so we feel that, over a few months or years, we would see ransomware operators try and shy away from these critical infrastructure companies just to keep the feds out of their hair and focus their attention on some of the other vulnerable sectors like manufacturing, retail, healthcare, education. That's the trend we are seeing. And the another trend that we're also seeing is ransomware groups may choose to do data exfiltration, theft, and extortion rather than encrypting the victims. So because there's a lot of global privacy mandates emerging across the world. So data privacy is a very big thing. Many governments have brought in regulations around data privacy. The fines and penalties are increasing. So we've seen a trend where ransomware groups the threat actors are now turning their attention into other geographies like Indonesia, Australia, for example, where we've seen, a lot of large data breaches. And there's a huge risk of class action suits, right, running into millions and billions of dollars there. So that's really one of the key trends that we see emerging in the ransomware side of things.
Kaustub, with your skills and knowledge and your team's efforts and, leveraging AI and machine learning, I'm just curious, and there's been a lot of excitement about ChatGPT. The whole world's waking up to AI's multiple uses. There's so many uses for AI. I can see an interesting future for us where AI becomes more of a, hopefully, a very useful tool, as you guys have used in cybersecurity. Do you think the cyber criminals are taking advantage of AI equally as well, and how would they be using it?
No, absolutely. I mean, ChatGPT, OpenAI, the new kid on the block, everyone gushing over it for the past few months. And obviously, From a cyber threat intel perspective, we definitely see the benefits accruing from there to the cyber security research community. But also, there is no doubt that it is a dual use technology, where we've already seen a lot of effort from the threat actors trying to create advanced malware, which can actually evade some of these security solutions like antiviruses and EDR solutions. So that's definitely a warning sign for us there. It's definitely a concern area as well. And if I had to be very, very specific, I would say to an extent, ChatGPT may well turn out to be a solution for democratizing malware development, because you've seen the kind of complex code that ChatGPT is able to write today, right? So there is no doubt that threat actors are going to abuse ChatGPT to create malware, stealer malware, ransomware, even, using the AI capabilities. And there are also reported cases of ChatGPT being used to create very, very convincing phishing email templates as well, which can evade email filtering solutions. And while it's early days, I'm sure we are going to see a lot of ChatGPT related cybersecurity use cases and threats emerging in the near future. So that's an area to look out for.
Long time ago, there was a Star Trek episode where Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock land on some planet, and they got so advanced with AI, they decided to not have real wars anymore. They let their AI solutions fight each other. But then they'd say, okay, we had casualties, so this number of citizens has to go in the casualty box. But it was, it was in the late 60s they had this idea. And today here we are with AI actually being realized not too long later in the timeline. And it actually sounds like it can be weaponized, even though it's meant to be friendly, right? ChatGPT, ask it a question. I've seen some of the source code output, and it's very good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's really, in a way, it does reduce a lot of dependence on high-skilled labor and, churning out large chunks of code in a very short span of time. But on the other hand, it is going to be used or weaponized by the cyber criminals to enhance and up their game. So yeah, I mean, as you said, we are already here. The era of AI is already here, and we need to be prepared to counter some of these things. But to be on the positive side of things, I am also convinced that some of these AI-based tools are going to be used even for building security solutions, right? To counter some of these things. So it's going to be an interesting battle.
Definitely. And the battle is, there's a silent cyber war going on, and we don't have a Geneva Convention about it. Do you think nation states should come together and agree on their behavior about this? Or they're just going to, because it's hard to do attribution anymore, isn't it? I mean, we don't know if it really came from Russia or China or whoever.
No, absolutely, Gary. So we've seen, threat actors reusing a lot of techniques, malware tools. So, attribution of threat actors to a particular nation state or a cyber criminal is no longer that easy. And you're never really sure, whom you're up against. So we've seen instances where threat actors routinely, use multiple techniques and tools. Infrastructure is changing. So, they typically rely on obfuscating their footprint. And so to an extent, threat attribution becomes very difficult. Having said that, cyberspace regulation really, I think, is a difficult thing to do, because where do you draw the boundary, really? And every state, every nation has its own political and economic interest to look after. So, there is obviously a lot of focus and collaboration, cooperation that is happening. We've seen, especially for threats like ransomware, we've seen multi-country, multilateral cooperation emerging, where countries have come together and said, decided to, combat these menace. I mean, I think it's still early days, but that's an interesting space to watch. Yeah.
Let's dive a little deeper into what you do and what your team does. And is it a product? Is it a service? Is it a SaaS offering? How does it get deployed? Who's leveraging you? And what are the kinds of results you're seeing?
Yeah, so I think the basic philosophy that we follow here at Cybal is, you know, we look at three pillars of the threat intel problem that industry faces today, and that is visibility, it is actionable intelligence, and the third is remediation and incident response. So we see these three as the, you know, the core pillars of providing valuable intelligence to customers. Despite having a lot of investments in cybersecurity, and we've seen Fortune 500 companies getting breached, right? And they had no limitations of budget, skills, talent, and management commitment. And so, you know, the real problem is that cybersecurity teams are really struggling to answer some of the fundamental questions like, you know, are we a target? Who is attacking us? What do our adversary know about us? What type of assets do we have exposed? Right? Do we know how many of our users are getting compromised? You know, which are the threats that we should be aware of? Right? And are we secure? So that's the fundamental question that security teams get asked. And unfortunately, many of the cybersecurity teams, they really struggle to come up with a confident answer. And at Cybal, we are trying to address this problem, you know, by helping our customers first and foremost get visibility of their entire attack surface, by bringing them intelligence, you know, that is very, very specific to their industry and to their organization, and then kind of building a model where they can not only consume threat intel, but, you know, also be able to apply it in their environment. So we just don't provide them the intel, but we also provide them with guidance around how they should be implementing some of the policies and the filtering rules, and how they should be incorporating some of these into the security awareness for their customers and their employees to kind of make it actionable, right? So that's really the focus of Cybal. So our entire platform, we basically collect intelligence from thousands of sources. And we have a machine learning and AI-based layer to basically separate the chaff from the wheat and, you know, drill out those specific insights, you know, which can be immediately actionable for our customers. So, and I'm sure you'll agree that today in the era of so many security solutions, SIEM solutions, XDR solutions, I mean, each of the products churning out millions of events per day, it's ultimately is just leading to analyst burnout and fatigue. And we're trying to address this problem by using machine learning and AI, where we can use risk scoring based algorithms for every event, and then bubbling up only those specific critical incidents which require their attention. And we in fact go one step forward, and we also provide remediation and incident response steps for each of these events. So we're trying to solve the problem holistically and not just be a threat aggregator and a threat intel feed for the customer. That's really what separates us from the rest.
Are you offering this kind of like an MDR or MSSP provider, or and augmenting their staff with your own threat intel team?
Yeah, so I mean, all of those things, Gary. So our platform is you know, born in the cloud platform. It natively supports the MSSP model. So we have today a lot of MSSPs who can actually use our platform and deliver threat intel services directly to their customers without our intervention. So that's really a space that we are very strong in. Apart from that, we do have a very, very skilled and niche set of threat researchers, incident responders, forensic investigators who are available to assist our customers when they face a critical cybersecurity incident. Because these researchers are very, very experienced. They literally work behind enemy lines, you know, when they go on the dark web and, you know, identify a lot of threat actor chatter, being a part of the privileged groups and gleaning out intelligence from these sources. And we have also effectively assisted a lot of customers in managing ransomware incidents as well. So we do offer managed threat intel as a service to some of the large clients, you know, who want to augment some of their SOC security teams with our expertise.
Kostub, what's the difference between the deep web, the dark web, and the surface web? I assume surface web, everybody can access it. And, you know, the dark web, I'm using Tor, and it's hidden and it's encrypted. Can you give your view of those three areas of the internet and how you help keep an eye on that, as you said, behind enemy lines?
Yeah, right. So as you said, the surface web is basically, you know, all those websites which are easily accessible through your standard browsers, whereas the dark web is basically that part of the internet which is typically, you know, shielded from the public view and is only accessible through the Tor browser. It's basically, you can call it as an unregulated part of the internet where anonymity is the main benefit, so anonymity and privacy. And then you have the deep web, which is basically sites which you can access, you know, either through the dark web or the on the surface web, but they are behind, you know, a login account. So which means you need to be a part explicitly of that site to be able to go and access, you know, some of these sites. They are not publicly accessible through a browser. You need to maybe create an account, be a part of the group, and then access that information. So a lot of these peer-to-peer networks, you know, peer-to-peer chat groups, messenger groups, invite-only groups or sites, forums, these are some of the deep web sections of the internet, as we call it.
Why do you think governments are so upset at TikTok? Is it because all that data is flowing back to the Chinese government and they're geolocating phones and eavesdropping on microphones and collecting all the data they can from, you know, all the connectivity that phones have? What are your thoughts on that?
Most of these tools today, you know, their whole business model is built upon the premise that they are going to have access to a lot of personal data, which they can analyze and then use it for personalization, profiling, behavioral-based advertising. And the problem with these apps is you really never know when this information is going to be misused or accessed by other agencies by exerting political pressure and probably used as a tool for surveillance. And there are some serious privacy concerns with regards to the usage of some of these tools. And, you know, as a result, many of the countries have recently decided to ban some of these apps. It's really frightening the level of complexity and advancement that some of these algorithms, you know, which have been used to do some of the profiling and behavioral targeting of the users and the kind of data points that they are able to gather, you know, about the users, including their location, their, you know, what kind of places they visit, how long do they spend in what location. So essentially, you are creating a digital twin of a user. If you are able to gather all this data, and then, you know, the information is definitely very sensitive and could be misused if it falls into the wrong hands. And that's where, I mean, these are some really, really legitimate concerns that some of these, you know, agencies have towards these apps.
I've also heard recently, I think it was in our on our news page, that I think Twitter's API was hacked, and, you know, some of these main platforms for social media, they're surface web, but, you know, they're social media, but they're so popular that I think social media is coming in second to email for just use of the internet over just web browsing anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the social media has now become the next, you know, Times Square, so to say, and everyone wants to have their say on it. And obviously, just like other tools, there are mechanisms where you can use that data of the users for profiling. There is, in fact, a lot of threat intelligence that can be gathered through social media. I mean, there are a lot of white hat researchers who are sharing a lot of, you know, their findings and, you know, talking about critical vulnerabilities, threat actor campaigns and stuff like that. A fantastic source for open source intelligence. But at the same time, I mean, because of the nature of the data that they handle, they are definitely a target of, you know, the threat actors. So we've seen recently the social media being abused for a lot of misinformation, disinformation campaigns. A lot of threat actors actually abuse social media even for launching phishing campaigns, embedding malware and phishing links, you know, doing brand impersonation of employees, impersonating the brand of a company, you know, and tweeting some content which could be, you know, which could actually impact their reputation. So we've recently seen a few months back where one of the pharmaceutical companies, you know, was impersonated and something tweeted about the company making its product free or something and really caused a dip into the stock price. So, you know, this is some of the things that we also manage through our platform where we do social media monitoring and we are able to identify all these suspicious activities and then inform our customers so that they can immediately take action.
That's awesome. Kostub, is there anything else that you want to cover that we haven't covered for our viewers and listeners?
Broadly, I think we touched upon the core aspects of how to make threat intel actionable for customers. And that should really be the focus of the cybersecurity community. And that's what Cyble is striving towards. We are enhancing our capabilities with machine learning, artificial intelligence, where we are able to identify emerging threats even before they cause impact. And that's something that we'll continue to focus on in the coming future.
That's wonderful. I really enjoyed this hot seat today. And I definitely want to recommend our viewers and listeners, most of them are maxed out and they're getting too many alerts and they don't know how to handle it. If you're overwhelmed, as most of us are with this, you need actionable threat intel. You need a partner like Cyble. Check out his website at cyble.com.
You've been listening to Cyber Defense Radio. Stay tuned next time for another amazing and informative episode. CyberDefenseRadio.com is proudly part of the Cyber Defense Media Group, where InfoSec knowledge is power.
Cyber Defense TV and Cyber Defense Radio have launched 24/7/365 live streams. Visit them online today at cyberdefense.tv and cyberdefense.radio. With your host and globally recognized cybersecurity expert and my good friend, Gary Milevsky.